Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Kendall Locke. Sir, you may begin.
Okay, thanks a lot. I got a Mr. and a Sir all in one sentence. This is very nice. Doesn't happen too often. So good morning, everyone. I'm actually dialing in here from our lab in Rome, where we are responsible for some of the solutions and products we'll talk about today. As you probably saw in the sales play, the title talks about data center automation, and in particular, many of the things we'll talk about in this session apply in the general space of data center automation, but we're really going to spend a little time, as you can see on slide two in the agenda, on the particular interest in virtualization and how data center automation plays probably an even stronger role in those kinds of opportunities. And you'll see as we go through the discussion why we think that actually is a sweet spot for us and a place where we can really raise not only customer awareness, but most importantly, close business with products that we have on our truck today. So just quickly in the agenda, and I'll try to go through the first section relatively quickly because, you know, if we can't explain it to each other in a short number of minutes, obviously we're going to struggle to do it in front of our clients. So I will try to do this kind of in the short form. You have the slides and notes, obviously, to back much of that up. About midway through, I'm going to turn it over to Sig Puchas, who will talk about the back half of the presentation that has to do with how to drive the financial metrics and license and management and other things that we're doing, how to identify who you're talking to, who to sell to, how to be successful in going through those kinds of calls. And of course, obviously, each of us and our teams are always here to help because at the end of the day, you know, if we don't sell these things, then we're wasting our time here within the labs. So let's move ahead. Slide three talks about virtualization, and I can tell you from a very personal perspective, we are exactly like our customers in this regard. So as you can imagine, here within the labs, just as you would expect every year, we have more and more product versions that we need to either build or maintain. We need to improve and increase our scalability and stability. We work on high availability scenarios. We support products for longer and longer now, 5 years instead of three. So the combinations and matrices that we have to manage in order to keep all of these things going continues to get far more complex. And as you can imagine, every year we struggle to find the, you know, the number of servers and machines that we require to do all of those things in the fastest possible way. And in many cases, we worry about having to serialize things that we need to deliver to your teams, to our customers, because we're just booked, right? We're out of bandwidth. And like our customers, we have the same problems in that going and asking for more money in order to purchase a number of new servers to continue to meet this increasing workload generally gets back some sort of a flavor of an answer from a polite, "You must be kidding," all the way out to intense laughing or expletives, sometimes in combination. And in fact, I'm sure when you go through the same scenario with your customers, you'll hear the same kind of thing. So slide three gives kind of the classic IDC data factoids around, you know, just this explosive growth and the amount of work that all of us need to get done. And of course, at the same time, we need to get far better connected to the business and not just run IT as kind of the black hole of interesting technology. So if we move ahead to slide four, you know, this slide is really to say that, by the way, this is not just the belief that we've come up with from our own observations and time spent with clients, but if you use someone like a Gartner or an industry analyst as a benchmark for trends in the industry, you'll see this pretty much universally. Strategic technology area virtualization right up there in number one. Slide five, we'll move ahead and we'll talk a little bit about how we manage it, but it's important to understand, you know, why is virtualization really at the top of the list. at the end of the day, this is, you know, a major way to break this cycle or this unsolvable equation between having a lot more work that needs to get done and an inability financially to go and purchase more capacity in the form of physical servers to do that work. So what virtualization promises, and if you were a VMware sales rep, you know, you sort of mumble this in your sleep, is, oh, you know, you have all of the physical assets you need, you're just not using them very well. They're, you know, these things are, you know, 10, 15, 20% utilized, and think of all that extra capacity that really is just going to waste. If you could more cleverly harness and reuse that, you could deal with this workload explosion without having to go and talk to your CFO, which is a goal that all of us have. So what virtualization, of course, is about is really taking these physical capacities that exist in our organization, chopping those suckers up into logical server units that act, smell, and behave like real servers, so that we can stuff more work into the same physical chassis that we stuffed it into yesterday. Now the trick is this can be the call of the sirens, and what I mean by that is if you were to talk to your client, and we find this all the time when we talk to, you know, even relatively senior folks in the organization, this sort of sales call or this value proposition, of course, really sounds terrific. It's, you know, I have this tremendous problem, I have no way of solving it. This looks like something that could really help me not have to go and spend a whole bunch of money, avoid a bunch of extra costs, try to keep up, and, you know, my gosh, let's go do that. I'll buy some licenses and get going. The real danger here, and what we're finding time and time again, is that it completely ignores the idea of what it does to the labor necessary to manage these things in IT. So although you may have dealt with and solved the physical capacity problem by chopping it up into more units, remember what it's doing. It's basically turning them into logical servers that act, smell, taste, feel like real servers. And along with that comes all of the costs that real servers have. So if you think about slide 5 where it says, you know, what does Tivoli help you do? Why is Tivoli important? In the case of moving into some flavor of virtualization. And to be honest, more than important, why are we absolutely necessary to get the cost savings that you aim to achieve? The reason is because if you don't, you will basically drive the amount of labor you have to perform up exactly as if you had bought physical servers. Right. And the real danger is that with virtualization, in many cases, we have seen customers who, you know, essentially turn on, you know, hundreds of servers almost overnight, something that they actually could have never done with real physical servers. And as a result, they exacerbate the problem. They've essentially made a pain point that was there before extreme. Right? Show up for work and, you know, there's 400 servers that need applications on them, need software deployed, need to get critical tasks run within scheduling windows, you know, you name it. And you're no better off on Monday to deal with those servers than you were when you left the office on Friday. So this is a very, very dangerous game. And most customers who get started because they're on fire and virtualization looks like a bucket of water, will jump at this thing quickly, and then only when they start to use it and implement it do they realize the mess that they've gotten themselves in. So our goal here in data center automation, and in particular data center automation towards the use of virtualization, is to make sure that we talk to them about dealing with scaling their labor costs and reducing their labor costs, which, by the way, is probably the largest part of their budget, much more than what they're spending on their software licenses, in order to make sure that this thing really does, as a solution, help them save money. So you can see kind of the standard bullets. So these are bullets that apply no matter what, with or without virtualization, right? Reduce labor costs, improve financial controls. We'll see which parts we're talking about. Streamline manual tasks into automation, increase utilization, you know, prioritize, make sure that, that the things that get run and executed, particularly through some sort of a critical prioritization scheme, match the business interests, whether it was revenue generation or risk reduction. All good stuff, and again, sort of generic to data center automation. So slide six, though, reiterates, you know, what we've been talking about. So as soon as I power on virtual servers, you know, what have I really saved, right? So there's no server in the world that does a useful business function with a blank operating system sitting on it, right? They require software to do something interesting. They require applications. So they have to be provisioned, just like physical servers. There's absolutely no difference whatsoever. I've got to get the stuff on there that I need to run some critical business function, whether it's a long-term application, something that's just software deployed and provisioned, managed through an inventory, or whether it's shorter in duration, like what we would do in workload scheduling, something that needs to be run as a task that has dependencies in a process flow that need to get executed together to bring some business result to a close. So that's challenge number one, is these things show up. They can show up a lot faster than they used to, and I still have exactly the same problems in labor I had before. If I don't have some way of automating that, I will basically drown under the weight of these new servers. The second thing that is interesting and perhaps even more unique to virtualization is that these things, because of their virtual nature, their logical servers, also have a tendency to be able to come and go. So if you really want to get serious about squeezing utilization, what you tend to do is pool these things so that they can be shared between multiple teams, right? And so because it turns out in real life, and this is certainly true in the labs, you know, we have peak utilization. We may need hundreds of machines for a period of 4 weeks because we're running scale testing on our software provisioning on TPM, for example. But after that 4 weeks, you know, we've reached successful results, we ship the product, we, you know, move it to manufacturing, we get our maintenance streams running, we start designing some of our next features, and those, many of those machines could be reused or shared with something like TWS, workload scheduling, because it may be entering a critical test phase. And our clients do the same sort of thing. Now, the damage that can do is a bit more subtle in that because these things tend to come and go, or get repurposed, if you will, kind of dynamically, a lot of times the software applications and tasks that we run from a workload perspective weren't designed to expect that. They're used to being run on physical machines. They expect that once the machine is there, concrete is poured over it. Unless it is retired for some particular reason, in general, those things just don't move around. And as a result, things break. They get brittle. So once again, if you don't have a system that allows you to quickly get the software in place that you need to repurpose a machine, once again, all of the value is lost. So taking it away from one team because they're finished, giving it to another, you know, as a blank piece of metal, once again, has virtually no value, right? There's no economy that's been gained by doing that. Similarly, if you are designing and running critical workloads, so things around you know, the closing of financial ledgers, things around claims processing, for example, in the insurance industry, stuff that runs in a workload scheduling environment, you know, usually things that are very, very revenue and cost driven, if they are designed to run on certain physical instances, in the best case, they may just run slowly, meaning that I could take advantage of these extra servers and actually get more of these things run in a given unit of time, maybe driving up the top line of my company. But in the worst case, they can break. So if I had something that was designed to run on a virtual server, that server disappears because it was loaned out or reprovisioned to another team, all of a sudden one critical step in a claims processing system may just no longer work, and you're going to have critical damage to the business. So our software is very much about making sure that not only can we automate the steps, but we can easily react to the changes that you would want to drive here so that you get the optimal cost savings. So there's a flavor of automation here. There's also a flavor of dynamic configuration and provisioning that both TPM and TWS bring to the party. So if you move forward to slide 7, right, so we've talked about a lot of these challenges, and let me tee up again what a lot of the rest of the discussion is going to be about. There are 4 main products that we recommend in terms of dealing with this particular type of solution rollout. So we've talked a fair amount about Provisioning Manager, TPM, and Workload Automation, which is a family name, Tivoli Workload Scheduler, and the Dynamic Workload Broker being the main elements of that. So those are really, you know, two legs on your stool. The Provisioning Manager, of course, is majors on quickly getting the software and applications onto the machines, virtual or physical, that you need to run your business. That's what it does, every millisecond of every day and every night. And it's quite good at doing that. And because of workflows and some of the policies and configurations you can put, also has a notion of being able to logically instantiate these things quite rapidly, can handle some of the changes that occur. The Workload Automation family similarly introduced something called the Dynamic Workload Broker probably a couple of years ago, which also is an evolution of the design of workload scheduling. And what it really does is it takes the idea of targeting a particular task to run or a job to run, and instead of saying, I want that job to run on that machine with host name X, it says, I want this job to run on any machine that has the following prerequisites. So it needs to be this set of operating system, have this particular application on it, et cetera, et cetera. So it allows you then to drive work based on criteria or prerequisites rather than based on physical binding. And this is a huge, huge deal. And in fact, one of the things that separates us from our competitors in this space. Right. And it also has some intelligent routing associated with it that allows things like, you know, drive it to the machine that is least utilized so that you kind of maximize the output of your pool of machines that you have available to you. And again, the goal is just to make sure business critical work gets done in the time frames that are allowed and gets done in the optimal way. Now, the second half of the discussion also introduces the idea of, okay, so this is all great. I'm ramping up virtual servers like crazy, but this isn't out of hand because I'm automating getting my software and applications provisioned, and I'm really virtualizing, if you will, the dispatching of my critical jobs and workloads so that it can keep up with the pace of change and, in fact, take advantage of this explosion in computing power so that I actually get more done in a given unit of time than I did before. The next challenge becomes, so, once the auditors show up, and they start asking me questions, how can I make sure with all this wonderful dynamic, you know, coming and going, that I'm in control? How do I make sure that I'm not violating, terms and conditions, software license agreements, you know, financial conditions, SOX compliance kinds of activities? And this is where the usage and accounting manager, so that you're really understanding who's driving the work in this kind of pool of virtual servers, and then, of course, the license compliance management, so that I know I stay within my caps and the contracts that I have in place. These things are huge, critical. So the first two you can think of as survival. I got to run them just to make sure that I don't completely drown. The second thing keeps me from getting fired. Right? So I can keep up with my job with the first two. I can keep my job from a legal standpoint and an ethics standpoint with the last. And probably an extra word or two on the TUAM and SIG, I'm sure we'll talk about this as well. But this, again, is subtle. It's more than just the standard value proposition of usage and accounting manager. And again, I'll use an example from the labs. One of the behavior changes that we see in our clients when they take on virtualization is it's difficult for the managers in the business units or IT even to overcome this need of hoarding resource, right? So we've all been trained that when a supply of something is finite, then of course the successful animal is the one who goes and collects all the food and stores it in their cave. That way you can be sure you have what you need even if you don't turn out that you use all of it. And that kind of behavior is quite common. We struggle with that same behavior when we started this approach in the lab many months ago. And TUAM is absolutely critical for helping get underneath these bad behaviors and reinforce kind of organizational learning, right? How do I make sure that I adapt myself to this model of closer to utility computing than it is about, you know, this land is mine and that land is yours? ANSYG, I think, has some examples of how to apply some of that in that way. So I'm probably speaking 300 kilometers per minute. So a short pause. Any particular questions or things that don't make sense? So far, so good. All right. So let's move ahead to slide 8. So slide 8 just nets out the first half of the equation we talked about, TPM and TWS. So again, at the end of the day, this is very, very simple. TPM is completely about getting the software, applications, and tools in place on the stuff that you're running so that you can get the business work done, period. It is just as important to get things that run 24/7 in the cases where you're just using virtualization to meet a need of growth. It is also critical for getting the prerequisites in place for making sure that you can run critical workloads, batch jobs, and other things using workload scheduler. So in any scenario you can envision, even if you were using virtualization to kind of manage peaks and valleys in workload, critical component. TWS, of course, is all about making sure that any data processing task, and we'll see a couple of customer examples here, any data processing task that has to happen within a given unit of time, typically very, very tied to financial results or to customer satisfaction or claims processing, you have to make sure that those things get done in a reliable way, predictably within the time constraints that are provided. Very, very important. And again, this is something that's quite unique about us. We use plan-driven scheduling, which is a system that pre-compiles all of the things you need to do so that you can be sure before you go to sleep tonight and they run during your windows that they'll all get done in the time that you have provided. Very, very critical. And again, you can see some examples around cost reduction ROI. Those numbers are just as good in a general data center automation play as they are in virtualization. And again, virtualization, if anything, kind of increases the pain if you don't have automation in place. So slides 9 and 10 just give you a couple of customer references and examples. Health Trans is the first. And you can see in their particular case, they have more than 280,000 insurance claims that they needed to process each day. And this was, of course, and by the way, the processing claims and all that is the major component of customer satisfaction from their point of view. But also, it's critical to have accurate data to make sure that they drive the statistical tables and drive the correct revenue and profit ratios that they have to do. So in their particular case, these claims were spiking. They were using just cron. I mean, they had a scheduling system in place, basically using what the operating system provided in their Unix systems, and it just flat couldn't scale to meet the growth that they had. Again, they were unable to get the physical processing power that they needed. And of course, it lacked completely the idea of things like high availability and load balancing and pooling, like we've talked about with the dynamic workload broker. So they implemented our solution based on workload scheduling and the workload broker. As you can see from the right, tremendous reduction in the amount of time to get the claims processed, great deal of customer satisfaction improvement that comes with that. And something that may be not quite as obvious, they also reduced their energy costs. So we have a lot of discussion around green and et cetera, et cetera. And what we found is just by driving a set of policy and configuration around utilization, we can condense, in many cases, a set of work onto fewer machines and leave the others in standby mode, if you prefer, and actually drive down the energy costs. And for those of you who have messed around with some of the formula and examples around green energy, those costs are not inconsequential. So in addition to dealing with an automation challenge in virtualization, we actually are able to contribute to better cost savings and energy management as well, a nice side effect of the work. Slide 10 is a customer, Swiss Re, who in particular has been on a path of acquiring a number of companies to grow their presence, again, in insurance markets, you know, quite common space for us to work in. And as you can imagine, in doing so, they had this strong pressure in order to gain the cost benefits of acquisition to quickly standardize every one of these acquisitions into a single system that could be managed by, in their case, the same staff who had managed them without the acquisition. That was their challenge. So we're going to acquire all these companies. We're going to take in an amount of workload in IT equivalent to, you know, dozens and dozens of staff. However, you're not going to get any of those staff, and we expect you to do as good or better a job when you're finished. So in their particular case, they moved very, very aggressively into the provisioning space, and you can see they use our CCMDB as well. They also use the asset management solution around Maximo. So they built a very strong template-driven approach for everything that they do, so that every application that they integrated into the system, regardless of acquisition, had a pattern to follow that was based on the processes and automations that we provided in our solution. And as a result, and by the way, all of their change requests, their change system was also folded into the same system. And as a result, you can see on the right, they actually grew their workload, in their estimation, about 300%, but maintained the same staff that they had to begin with. An incredible result with a very difficult challenge. So again, kind of two, you know, case studies that really show off or demonstrate a lot of what we've been talking about. So slide 11 really gets you into a little flavor of, you know, how to go off and look for and drive these deals, including, you know, what's the kind of profile that we're looking for, what are the kinds of lead questions. I think at this point it's probably best for me to pass the microphone over to my partner, Sig. And Sig, I'll let you take it away and kind of talk through some of the experiences on how to size up, find the right kinds of deals, and drive them to successful closure.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Kendall, and honored to be on the phone with the director of the Rome Lab this morning. My name is Sig Puchaz. Hopefully many of you know me by now. I cover the financial management suite, usage and accounting manager, and the software license compliance products for North America, and I am very, very pleased to be here with you this morning. So if we look at chart number 12, this is a little bit of a snapshot of the chart we had early on the presentation, and what we're really trying to focus on, and I think you heard a lot of the words from Kendall this morning, is that a lot of the early interest in virtualization and priority in virtualization has been very much on the technical side. The interest in things like workload scheduler and provisioning manager to go and take a lot of those latent server costs that are out there, and you can see the server revenue is really very flat, and that is heavily attributed to the price performance things that have been done with the power servers and the system Zs, etc. But it is also this rise of virtualization that is keeping that down. But the upper portions here of the people and the software costs and the energy costs are things that are growing very, very rapidly. And as the people start getting into this dynamic infrastructure, this automated scheduling on demand, provisioning on demand, all of a sudden they're finding out that they need to be able to get their handle around some of the things relative to staying out of trouble contractually with things like license compliance management, but also being able to demonstrate back to the business how this virtualization is helping them drive down costs, but also going and figuring out how to recover those costs within the different organizations. And so the products that we're going to talk about, usage and accounting manager and license compliance manager, based at least on the activity rise in the last 6 months in these areas, are heavily driven by people understanding that they want to go towards virtualization, but now I have to go and be able to indicate back to the business how I'm taking those dollars, saving dollars, and also recovering those dollars internally. So if we look at chart number 13, this is really usage and accounting manager benefits that I want to cover with you. I mean, the bottom right-hand quote is probably the key one here from a management perspective. You can't manage what you don't measure, and usage and accounting manager really puts you in a position to now understand who's using what within your organization at one cost or at what cost. The first bullet here about increasing the enhancing the relationship between the lines of business and IT is a real benefit of usage and accounting manager, especially as you get into this dynamic infrastructure. Now we're providing reports back to the business, and probably more importantly, back to the individual user of IT, what benefit they're getting out of their IT dollar, but also more importantly, how their behavior impacts their expense. Earlier, Kendall used the term black hole of IT costs, and a lot of organizations do look at IT that way. If they're not getting indications of how they can affect their budgets with information on how to change behavior to affect that, that's the way they're viewing IT right now. We had an example of one customer, a large farm manufacturer in the Midwest. Their organization, their lines of business had been requiring backups of their database systems 5 times a day. They implemented usage and accounting manager. They quantified the cost of those backups. They went back to the lines of business and said, you realize this is what, you know, where those backups are costing. The lines of business people said they didn't really realize the excess expense there. They looked and made a business decision between the risks of backing up once a day and versus 5 times a day, and were able to, you know, see very, very large benefits and cost reductions in their IT bills as they went to going backing up once a day as opposed to 5 times a day. The second piece on lowering the overall infrastructure cost, I have met with customers in the last 12 months that actually the inability to do this reporting on virtualization has been an inhibitor of them being able to implement virtualization, and we remove that with usage and accounting manager. But probably more importantly, we now have the data available to rationalize, if you will, how the resources are being used, and as additional requirements for resources come to play, we're able to go and provide that type of data to say if the business is going to grow 5% this month, or I should say over this next calendar year, we need this additional resources to maintain that. Or I can demonstrate if I go to virtualization, I can defer purchasing hardware, take those dollars, and use them for better use within the organization. So usage and accounting manager gives you that level of visibility. And then the last piece, and you know, I know Tivoli is really the, you know, service management brand for IBM and ITIL, but the whole idea of continued infrastructure improvement is really, if you take ITIL, there's that whole financial management discipline there that says, I understand my cost structure, I take actions like virtualization or going to fewer larger servers from a lot of different servers, measure the results of the impact of that, things like how I'm better utilizing existing servers, how I'm reducing manpower, how I'm reducing energy costs. I collect and make that visible back to the business that I've gotten what I planned in enhancing that cost structure and get into a continual improvement process. And that's what usage and accounting manager, that's the kind of visibility it can provide. Are there any questions about that?
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone.
Okay. If we move to chart number 14, this really just tells you what usage and accounting manager are for you that might not know what it is. It is, in fact, a cost accounting system, financial reporting system for the IT organization. It focuses very specifically on all of the usage across the entire infrastructure, not just a specific platform like Unix, Linux, but all of your platforms, including your virtualized platforms. It looks at shared resources within the system, not just the CPU and I/O activity and memory activity, but it can go and look into the database systems, into storage, into print services, give visibility who's using those and at what cost. and then providing a web portal, an interactive web portal back so that the lines of business people can see their actions and their expenses as it relates to the IT infrastructure. It also equips the IT executives and IT finance, and we'll talk a little bit about that on how you sell this to and who the buyers are, but those people have the visibility and the information now that they can report back to the business the value of IT and what's being delivered. Is a piece of trivia that I use a lot with talking to customers, and it's been validated by the customers. IT now represents the number two or three largest expense within many organizations. That means the boardroom discretion on IT isn't no longer, oh, those are the technology guys, they need some money and they ask us for money to run the IT organization. They're now asking the same hard questions. What is it costing us to support our web systems? What is it costing us to go to a new ATM infrastructure? This provides those IT executives and finance with that data and visibility. And then finally, for the people that are running the infrastructure, these web reports give them a very, very clear idea of how the resources are being used, who's consuming those resources, so they can make better decisions on which platforms or, you know, platforms are good candidates for virtualization or how they can optimize that infrastructure. And then, you know, the funnel on the right-hand side of the chart just illustrates how the product does what it does, and that's really collecting a lot of the usage information and financial information, bringing it into a central server, and then representing those three different views of the data, the line of business views of the data, the IT executive and finance views to the data, and the IT professionals. So if we move on to chart 15, this is a mature product. It's actually been doing this kind of activity for over 30 years in the mainframes, and a lot of the requirements for this level of visibility, you know, came out of the mainframe days because it was an expensive shared infrastructure, and that's what virtualization is taking us to, and a shared infrastructure of a lot of on-demand requirements, so that visibility is required. And we've also been doing this for distributed systems for over a decade. But if we look at some of these customers, this large healthcare insurer, and this gives you an idea of some of the business paybacks, but this was a merger of two different Blue Crosses on the East Coast. They had this, all of these different costs that they had to represent, the mainframe costs, the distributed costs. They actually, given the merger, had to go and look at a couple of different cost structures to combine. They had a lot of federal auditability, which a lot of this helps with, is meeting those audit requirements. So they brought together those different cost structures, were able to combine it, and they were actually able to identify $5 million a month that they were underbilling the U.S. government. And since this was a nonprofit, it was able to benefit their members directly. The insurance financial broker, the reason I bring them to bear is that they're also showing that it's not just the infrastructure that you want to collect your costs around, but it is the people, so bringing in labor costs, bringing in telecommunications, bringing in inventory information, which, as we all know, in a dynamic environment, is difficult to bring together. But they did this initially just to report back to the business who was using those costs so they could evolve to a chargeback structure. The large aerospace company just shows you the scalability, and they had an interesting situation. They had their RYO stands for Roll Your Own System, but they actually had a system they had written in-house. The person announced that they were retiring in 6 months, and you know, IBM and Tivoli were able to go and help them get the replacement system up and running within 6 months of their, across a very, very large infrastructure. And then the state government is another interesting one, because they had five different invoicing systems. You talk about dissatisfied end users, they're saying, I'm getting five different bills, five different formats. You know, how do I go and affect any of this billing? So they were able to consolidate those five different billing and also meet all the government requirements. And one of the reasons I point that out is because I'm working with a prospect that has had to actually write a check to the federal government for over $41 million because they couldn't meet audit requirements that, in fact, the federal dollars that they were being given by the U.S. government, they couldn't prove that they were only being used for federal programs. So the visibility and the auditability is something that we can really help with usage and accounting manager. If we move to chart number 16, the other term you might want to hear around this is all about cost transparency, who's using what and at what cost. The people that you target these discussions on, and the people now that are getting very engaged with IT, are the finance people and the IT executives, because as I said earlier, those are the people that are trying to communicate benefit to the organization and trying to defend why the budgets are the way they are. So those are the key decision makers. So when, you know, and that's why they get brought in. The technical people get very excited about things like provisioning and workload scheduling, but then the finance people and the executives are saying, how is it we're going to be able to go and report costs and prove benefits of going to this new technology? So the script on the right-hand side, you know, is a typical script. Are you having trouble optimizing your costs, reporting those costs as to who's consuming what resources? Usage and accounting manager gives you that ability to do that and gives you the ability to fairly and accurately apportion costs. And is this something that sounds good to you, and can we have a discussion? But again, this is, I'm asking you a little bit to get out of your comfort level and getting more with the finance people and at the executive level to engage this discussion. I think if you do that, you can be very successful. Any questions about usage and accounting manager before we move on to license compliance manager? Okay. If we go on to chart number 17 in the area of asset management, you can well imagine with this dynamic environment that Kendall is talking about, understanding what software is deployed where is quite a challenge. And when we look at most IT executives, they're given three major challenges, right? One, innovate, make money for us. Number two, keep us out of trouble legally or keep us out of court. And number three, help us save money, reduce costs. And license compliance management family of products really are about those latter two. One is to make sure that I'm not breaking those contractual agreements I've made with the different licensing managers, and make sure I'm not spending too much for my license dollar. And that's really what license compliance manager family of products, both the ZOS-based product as well as the distributed product, help you with. We go to chart number 18, license compliance manager family of products. It's really pretty straightforward. It goes out there, looks at what software is installed, make sure it has a cost, an accurate count of that. Then it takes a look at whether the software is being used, and that's a major differentiator here, because you can have software out there, but if it's not being used, it's probably, you know, you may be paying too much for your software. And that really relates to the third thing that license compliance manager does, and that's compare your contractual terms or your entitlements of the software that you have, and compares that against your deployment and usage. And, you know, I think we all sometimes are challenged with the different licensing models we have for our own products. You can imagine that gets multiplied very heavily when you look at other vendors' products as well. But License Compliance Manager gives you that visibility to understand what's out there, what's being used, how it applies to your entitlements, and does that reporting. Chart number 19 is probably the most important, when we talk about License Compliance Manager, most important chart in the deck. This really gives you, hopefully visibly, the value that License Compliance Manager delivers. You'd all like to be in the upper right-hand corner. It says, you know, I have the product out there and deployed, I'm using it, and I'm contracted for it. So hopefully, you know, that's the ideal situation. You're not overpaying for your software. The upper left-hand quadrant says I have it, I'm using it, I'm not contracted for it. That's a red light that somehow you have software that's been put out there and you're not contracted for it. In a dynamic infrastructure environment, you know, that could happen very easily because someone goes and decides they want to use a server because it's idle and they don't look at the contracting. And although, you know, it's very expedient to get the work done, we have to make sure that we're living within the contract terms. The bottom left-hand side says, I don't have it, I don't use it, and I'm contracted. Then you have to ask yourself, why do I have it at all, and can I cancel it? And then the bottom right-hand corner says, I have it, I don't use it, and I'm contracted for. And that's, you know, kind of similar to the bottom left-hand corner. If I've deployed it and I'm contracted for it, you can ask yourself, you know, why do I have a contract, why I'm not using it, and if it's valid that I have software that maybe I've deployed because I got it in an ELA, but I'm not using it, it's something I might, in the next set of negotiations with an ISV, decide I want to eliminate the maintenance on. Are there any questions? Okay, if we go to chart number 20, this is a customer success story and reference. I mean, Gartner will tell you that you should expect in the first year with a license, putting in a license compliance or an asset management system for software, to look for upwards to 30% justification or reduction in software costs and a repeating 10% improvement. And that's, you know, similar to what farmers found. Farmers had the problem that they were trying to manually track this software. Their software costs were rising. Interestingly, that, you know, they were originally initially just looking at the mainframe, which a lot of people, you know, go and tell you that that's easy to do. But in these large customers and growing customers, we repeatedly find that the manual method really just doesn't work. And you can see, you know, we proposed License Compliance Manager, the quote by Bob Becker down there that he was able to, in 18 months, eliminate several million dollars. I mean, that's a hard, fast savings. You can see that, you know, the, 1 year saving, they were able to pay for the product in 1 year. There were 30 to 40 products that they had low use or no use, and they were able to eliminate. And, you know, this is kind of a repeating story. The mainframe is kind of the simpler part. If you look at the distributed environment, that tends to be even more difficult, and we can help the customers there. Going to chart number 21, just like I had targeted before for usage and accounting manager, the finance people in the operational finance area and the executive, the target marketplace for license compliance manager is really the auditing department in procurement. They're the people that have to live up to the terms of the contracts. So those should be your key target people when you're looking about license compliance manager. And you can see the points here. You know, are you struggling with auditing requirements? We have a solution that's an end-to-end solution that can help you with that, and should we investigate this further? So that is the script for the license compliance manager or the elevator presentation for compliance manager. Any questions about license compliance manager or what we've talked about so far?
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1.
Okay, so if we move to chart number 22, you know, the call to action here is hopefully you find the information that we've provided to be very, very key information. We provide you with some key questions to look for in opportunities, whether it be within the dynamic infrastructure world around license or around scheduling and around provisioning, and then helping you manage those environments to make sure that once you've made those decisions, you can report back to the business the benefits and keep the business, if you will, out of trouble from a client compliance perspective. Look at those that information. Target your clients, especially people that are buying those large power systems that are looking to virtualize those and reduce the number of machines. Sell the solution. Look at selling multiple of these technologies together, because I will tell you, if you just talk about scheduling or provisioning, the business people are going to get involved and ask you, now that I go and implement this kind of environment, how do I understand who's using what at what cost, and am I staying within my entitlements? There are cost savings. and ROI, if you look at the total cost of ownership as opposed to just cost of acquisition, you know, looking at taking some of those benefits of virtualization and applying those to the software tools that you need to manage that environment. There's the workload cost analyzer, which is an enhanced set of reports for workload scheduler. You see the URL there that's out on Opal that you can use with your customers. And the BVA, Business Value Analyst tool, is out there and has ROI study information in all these areas. I know the usage and accounting manager ones in the process right now are being enhanced, but there's for a long time been ones for workload scheduling, provisioning manager. There are also, if you will, white papers. There are sales plays around here. There's a wealth of information available. As Kendall said, we're here to help. My job, I'm dedicated to helping with usage and accounting manager and license compliance manager activities. In the backup material, there are product managers also available in the product areas to help you with the solution area. I think this is an exciting time that we have. I know we all have a lot of challenges, but I think talking about cost reductions and better providing better information back to the business about how to manage this IT infrastructure is something that's key in the mind of all the IT executives that we're calling on. And with that, that's the end of the formal portion of the presentation. I think we have a few minutes for questions. Are there any questions that have come up?
We do have some questions. And once again, as a reminder, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you would like to ask a question. Our first question comes from Kirby Vaughn. One moment.
This is Kirby.
Yes, Kirby.
I was in a class last week for TANET, the asset management product, and they mentioned that sometime in the next year, TLCM is being rolled into TANET. Can you comment on that, and will TLCM be available, you know, as a separate product, or is it going to be bundled with TANET?
Okay, it's a great question. We are having an announcement in July. It's a fairly exciting announcement because when you look at the whole area of software asset management, there are the three disciplines I focused on here, which were understanding what's deployed, what's being used, and how that applies to your entitlement. But there's the whole contract portion of that, which says, you know, when is the software up for renewal, what have I been paying for the contract, etc. And for a long time, we've had a link between an adapter to get that information into TAMET from License Compliance Manager, both Z and Distributed. And so what's going to happen in December or in July is we're going to have, and this is kind of on like Provisioning Manager, where it's now on the former Maximo data model and workflow engine and presentation engine. We're doing the same thing with the licensing products. TLCMZ will be renamed, and it will remain a standalone product with some enhanced web reporting from the Tivoli reporting capability, but it will also have an enhanced interface directly into TAMET. What's going to happen with the distributed product is the Tivoli License Compliance Manager for distributed, it's actually going to become a priced feature of the TAMET product. So it will continue to be, I guess, to some degree, standalone, but the good news is it will have the same data structure, workflow structure, and user interfaces. On Opal, there are going to be best practice templates that go into TAMET to help with the whole software asset management area, but we're going more to that converged look and feel. But it will still remain will have a separate price feature onto TAMET, if that makes sense. Is that clear?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions?
Our next question comes from Mark Pachella.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I've got a question regarding TLCM. What can TLCM do in terms of calculating PVUs? That's one of our customers' largest pains. They understand what they have deployed. They know what's being used. But in terms of being able to understand CPUs, core count, and manufacturer of the servers, that, you know, that greatly determines their support and maintenance charges.
And that is part of what TLCM Distributed does, and it'll be carried forward in the follow-on enhancements to the product, is it does do deep discovery of the hardware characteristics so that it can give you PBU counts from an IBM perspective or, you know, other manufacturer perspective, as well as other metrics for other ISVs relative to the license model. So it does give you that metric.
Is this something that can help them on the audit side? In other words, does IBM auditing look at what TLCM reports and will count that as accurate?
Yes. And in fact, other people that, I mean, one of the things that, and I talked about keeping people out of trouble, but, you know, that's one of the major reasons people have TLCM Distributed is to prove to auditors, whether it's, you know, the independent auditors from IBM that IBM hires to come in to do things, or other manufacturers' auditors, this demonstrates that customers actively, if you will, managing their licenses and have documentation as to how not only they're deployed but also being used.
Great, thanks.
Our next question comes from James Martin.
Hey, Sig, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, we have the bundle called Management Edition for AIX and Enterprise Edition, which bundles IBM Civil Monitor, Civil Usage and Accounting and Discovery. I'm just kind of wondering, what's our experience been? Seems like ITM is the main focus of that bundle. Are we getting much traction in terms of usage and accounting, getting it implemented and having much success, in particular in the general business space? What have you seen there?
Well, I haven't, unfortunately, I haven't been as close to that offering as I should be. It was built specifically as a complement to ITM for virtualized environments, in that it has a fixed set of reports and a fixed accounting structure. So it can give you a very good sense of by user who's using what resources within a single P-box, but it doesn't give you the ability to go and consolidate that information across different processors. So I think there's been some traction. I know of at least one large bank that is using it pretty actively on the West Coast, but it was really built, as I talked about usage and accounting manager, a major focus being the accounting or the CFO department. The reports that come with the management edition kind of give the people a taste of what that can provide, but it's really focused on the IT systems administration population.
Okay.
And it can actually be used. I mean, if you have that product and they like what they see, it can actually, you can buy the administrative server and feed that information into the administrative server to provide a multi-platform view, and you can also then do customizations of the user structures and get more granular about how you set rates, etc.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
Well, this is Sig. I would like to thank everybody for their time. I am available if you need to reach me. Kendall, are you still there?
Absolutely.
I'll let you close it then, Kendall.
All right. So thanks again, Sig, and thanks, everybody. Hopefully this will help you get some real traction on an area that you know, we're very confident lots and lots of our clients are spending money on this year, even in, you know, an economy where their budgets are getting slashed. So, Sig mentioned, don't be shy. We're all here to help. We don't want to waste even a drop of effort from the product organizations because it doesn't matter if it doesn't sell and our customers aren't happy. So please reach out for whatever help you need, and otherwise, happy selling. Thanks for your time.
Bye now.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.